2016 marks Between the Lines' 25th year on the air. As we celebrate our all-volunteer independent media project's anniversary, please consider subscribing to our podcasts and supporting our work. Visit our website at btlonline.org, that's btlonline.org, for details on how to subscribe and make a contribution.
WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange, an Australian citizen, was granted asylum in Ecuador's London embassy 3.5 years ago, as he faced extradition to Sweden to answer questions on rape and sexual assault charges. While Assange denied the allegations, he refused to travel to Sweden, fearing that the government there would extradite him to the U.S., where he could face serious charges for leaking hundreds of thousands of classified U.S. military and diplomatic documents in 2010. Those documents were a great embarrassment to the U.S., exposing covert spying and military operations, as well as a video recording of U.S. helicopter gunships killing Iraqi civilians and two Reuters reporters. Assange's legal status in the U.S. is uncertain after a 2010 grand jury investigation found that there was sufficient evidence to bring charges against the whistleblower related to his release of U.S. documents given to WikiLeaks by Army Specialist Chelsea Manning, who was sentenced to 35 years in prison in August 2013. In a new development in the case, the United Nations Working Group on Arbitrary Detention issued a ruling on February 5th that found Assange's detention in Ecuador's London embassy should come to an end, and that he has the right to compensation for the more than 3 years he spent in illegal detention there. Your reporter spoke with Carrie Shankman, a U.S.-based attorney working on behalf of Julian Assange, who talks about the UN Working Group's ruling and the wider significance of the Assange case for both journalists and activists.
For the last 16 months, the UN's highest authority on detention has been conducting an independent investigation into the case. And after examining all the evidence that the UK and Sweden presented, on Friday, the UN announced that both countries were arbitrarily detaining Assange. So what that means is that the UN acknowledged that he is in fact detained, and second, that the reason for that detention is unjustified. So there's really two important pieces that come out of that. One, this is in effect the UN acknowledging the risk of onward extradition that Mr. Assange faces to the United States. And that sets a very important precedent for whistleblowers. As many listeners know, Edward Snowden currently enjoys asylum in Russia after disclosing NSA documents that have resulted in several U.S. programs being held unlawful by two branches of government. And it's widely recognized that whistleblowers face unprecedented persecution in the United States. So this is really kind of another step in that recognition of the risks that whistleblowers face. And the second part is that the underlying detention is not justified any longer because Sweden's really been dragging its feet with this case, hasn't been responding to the calls to question him. So that's why the UN came forward and said that Assange is arbitrarily detained and entitled to compensation.
This United Nations Working Group's ruling, as I understand it, really doesn't have the force of law in Britain or anywhere else. What is the concrete result of this ruling, if you would tell us?
Well, as an international lawyer, I can say actually that the reports that this doesn't have the force of law are actually factually incorrect. Actually, the West regularly relies on decisions by this working group when Western nationals are detained. So recently the president of Maldives was released following an opinion by the working group. And actually the Washington Post, many listeners might remember, a Post journalist was detained in Iran by the name of Jason Rezaian. And actually one of the very first things that the Post did was file an urgent petition with this very same group that decided in Assange's case. And what's really interesting is if you put side by side the way that like the New York Times and many outlets have written about this UN group in the Washington Post case contrasted with Assange's case, there's really a black and white difference between the attitude towards the group, showing a lot of respect in the former and dismissal in the latter. So this is something that does carry the force of law It is based on binding international legal obligations. And I think the most compelling point from our perspective filing the thing is that the UK and Sweden actually participated in this process and submitted to the jurisdiction of this body. They didn't simply ignore it.
Well, just a final question, Carrie, and that is this. Have you seen evidence of a chilling effect on journalism and activists providing heretofore secret documents revealing wrongdoing by governments or corporations as a result of what's happened to Julian Assange?
I think absolutely. I mean, there's no question about it. You know, I'm actually working on a book about the Espionage Act, and one of the things that I've learned in that research is that, you know, this law is one that is considered by the mainstream press, but I think following the WikiLeaks case and the publicity it's received, I think a lot of the big outlets are very concerned about publication. Now, you have some courageous, publications like The Intercept, which regularly publish the Snowden documents, and, you know, they still have shops set up. So I think we're not quite at the stage where we have a completely censored press, but I do know, and you see it with actually mainstream journalists. So you have like James Rosen, James Risen, who've been dragged through the mud by the Espionage Act because of their alleged relationships with their sources. The First Amendment protects a open, robust, and uninhibited press for the reason that freedom of the press is required to have effective checks on government, and also to make sure that we as citizens can participate and know how can we vote, how can we participate democratically without knowing what's actually happening with our government. And that, of course, is the reason why we have freedom of information laws. That's why we have a strong First Amendment. But really what the case against Mr. Assange and WikiLeaks threatens to do is undermine the very core of the First Amendment. And that actually is one reason why free press organizations around the world condemn the ongoing case. Actually, just after the UN decision came out, Anthony Romero, who's the executive director of the ACLU, he put out a statement in support of the opinion, and he said that the U.S. case against Mr. Assange is, quote, unprecedented and unconstitutional.
That was Carrie Shenkman, a U.S.-based attorney, working on behalf of WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange. Find more news and analysis of Assange's detention and the UN panel's ruling by visiting our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org.